Support for WPR comes from Luther College, accepting applications from high school students wanting to join a community dedicated to inclusivity, curiosity, and sustainability. More at luther.edu/apply. Support for WPR comes from Des Moines Art Center, presenting Father of Mexican Photography, Manuel Alvarez Bravo, Collaborations, on view through January 18th. Details are at desmoinesartcenter.org.
Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today about our state parks, forest, and recreation areas in Door County and southeast Wisconsin. This is the third in a series of conversations we're having on the 125th anniversary year of our Wisconsin State Park system. A couple of guests to start with, Jim Buchholz, a retired state park supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR. He's the author of this great book. It's titled Wisconsin State Parks, Forests, and Recreation Areas, A Ranger's Guide. Jim Buchholz, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Larry, and welcome and happy spring, almost.
Almost, huh? Eric Hyde is our other guest to start the show. He's a property supervisor for Peninsula State Park, Newport State Park, and Rock Island State Park. Eric, thank you for joining in.
Yeah. Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here. And as you listen to our two experts talk, I hope you'll join in the conversation. Have you visited Peninsula or Newport State or Rock Island State Park? Love to hear your comments as we move along today. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Jim, I want to start with you with a few questions. And first, because I like your book so much, and listeners today may not have heard you describe it before, but it's titled Wisconsin State Parks, Forest and Recreation Areas, A Ranger's Guide. Tell us what people are going to find in the book.
Okay. Well, it's quite a big book. It's about 400 pages, and I included 80 state parks, forests, and also recreation areas. That pretty much includes all of them, except the very newest ones that aren't developed yet. And I go through the history, a little geology of each one, human history, and then all the great things there are to do at each one of those individual parks, different trails and suggestions of which trails to take, and swimming areas, and camping, of course, and lots of other things. And included in there are two color photos of each of the parks, kind of representing each one. So that, and along with some kind of trivia type things that people may not know about that particular park. And they're kind of fun. It was a fun project to do, and spent a long time going to every single one of them and spending a few days at each one.
Well, I admire
it was
that.
A fun project.
Yeah, I admire that. I did a kind of a rough count. I think I've been to half the state parks. So to get and recreation areas, so for you to have all 80, this is a pretty good achievement. One of the parks I spend a lot of time at is Peninsula State Park. We've talked previously, Interstate Park was the first park in 1900. Peninsula State Park in Door County was the second state park. It was established in 1919. Why was that area developed as a state park maybe so early in our state history? Jim.
Oh, yeah, it sure has been. And it was on the list of established state parks, along with several other ones, Wyalusing State Park, which was called Nelson Dewey at one time, and Wisconsin Dells, which unfortunately never did become a state park, but it is a recreation area. Quite a few acres have been purchased there in the last couple decades. But certainly Peninsula, most people know it. Many people have been there. definitely one of the most popular state parks. That, along with Devil's Lake, is certainly the most popular of the state parks in Wisconsin.
Yeah. The maybe give a little history. Who lived in that area that would become Peninsula State Park?
Oh, there were several archaeological studies that have been done there over the years. So lots way back near the end of the Ice Age, actually, there were people there hunting and fishing. And it's always been a place that really has been used by Native Americans, First People. Archaeological excavations, I know they did at Nicolet Bay, which is the swimming area and the camp area and the park area. And they found woodland and I think Oneida people who lived in villages there. And they think it was, they have it back to BC, 400 BC, and up until 1300 AD, there were still people living there in small settlements.
Boy. Eric, you're the supervisor of Peninsula State Park and two other state parks. This kind of a plum assignment, it would be in my mind at least. How did you land there?
Yeah, so I'm actually, I was new to the DNR. I'd previously spent about 10 years working for Washington County as a land conservation technician, and then eventually moved into the park system and, yeah, saw this opening and, yeah, couldn't be more thankful for the opportunity to work at three of the most beautiful state parks we have here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's the third, if by numbers, most popular state park. I think we had, 1.1 million visitors last year?
Last year we actually had a little over 1.3 million visitors.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. What challenges come with managing a park that attracts so many people?
Yeah, so Door County alone offers a few issues with not having a lot of employee housing. It's not a very big population. I think the whole population of Door County is about 30,000, with a lot of it being in Sturgeon Bay. And there's a big tourist industry up here. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunities for summer employment for a lot of the local high school, college age kids. So we generally hire throughout the state, try to get state employees first, but then even, you know, we have to normally bring on a few out of state employees just to meet that requirement. So we're fortunate to have housing available here, but yeah, it's a big swing right now. It's fairly slow, even though all the ice is gone, but Peninsula State Park itself, I don't think a lot of people realize we have our own, you know, waste treatment plant that's similar to, you know, other towns and municipalities, smaller municipalities. So getting that, we have, you know, over 15, 16 bathroom flush facilities. So getting that all turned down, our water system, miles of utilities. So we're pretty much a small town here. So a small town that shuts down and then has to reopen every spring. So those are definitely the challenges. And then just, you know, working with our visitors, keeping them educated, you know, follow rules, respect the wildlife, you know, try to keep things clean, and then just maintaining an area that gets that much love each year. There's always, you know, different issues going on. So, yeah, but really it's, you know, when we get into summer months, we have over, you know, 250,000 people in the month of July coming most years alone. So a lot of folks.
And quite a few people play that 18-hole golf course. The park has its own 18-hole golf course. That's unique, isn't it, in the state park system?
Yep. Yeah, we're the only state park. They actually just celebrated their 100th anniversary of having a 9-hole layout last year in 2024. And it's a beautiful course. You have beautiful views of the harbor there in Ephraim. And, yeah, it's just a really interesting course.
Lots of reservations. Just one more comment on that. You need to make reservations to play the course, although there's a little trick that I've learned over the years that if you go at the beginning of the day, you could get in on the back nine.
Yeah.
and without a reservation, just by showing up, which I've done many a time there just because I didn't have a reservation. Oh, man. Jim, you say that Peninsula State Park it's often described as the most scenic park in Wisconsin. And why do you say that?
Well, its name alone, Peninsula, the whole park is in a giant peninsula that extends into the Green Bay area, Green Bay watershed. And it rises up on several cliff areas, limestone cliffs that raise 100 and some feet above the water level. And these areas, although they were touched by the glaciers during the glacier period, they resisted them. So they resisted that, and they resisted a lot of the elevations of the Lake Michigan, the ancient different named waters that rose like 50 feet or more higher than they are today. So we've got beautiful areas like the caves that were washed out by the waves of other lakes. And just the views from atop those bluff areas of the beautiful Green Bay area, just gorgeous views, you know, but by far, I think one of the most beautiful sceneries. And I think people that have visited Peninsula, certainly in the spring when the flowers are blooming, and again in the fall, it's just a beautiful colorama of color there. And there's quite a few roads in the park. It's just not one road in and one road out. There's several roads, and some of them go up to the top of the bluffs, so you don't have to climb these bluffs. If you don't want to, you can go up to the bluffs by vehicle and take a look over Nicolet Bay and the area, or you can go up the 60-foot observation tower, which is pretty new. So maybe Eric could fill you in more about that observation tower, which has really become a go-see thing at Peninsula within the last couple of years.
Yeah, Eric, can you talk about that? It is really, really cool.
Yeah, so this is actually the third version of Eagle Tower. So the first one was built in 1914, shortly after Peninsula became a park in 1909. Didn't really use the right lumber, so that didn't last, only lasted until 1932. And they built another one, and that's the one that stood into the 2000s. And the most recent one that opened in 2021. So like Jim said, it's about 60 feet high, but it sits on about 190-foot bluff overlooking Green Bay. So it's really neat, and it also includes a 850-foot accessible ramp. So it's been a beautiful thing to have here, but that's also added a lot more visitors up here. So, you know, we're working on what we can do to improve parking there, but it's just, you know, a testament to the beautiful views we have here in the park.
Yeah, and I like that ramp. I think it's really cool. I walked those steps many, many times with my daughter, but just the view you get as you're walking up the, let alone the view once you get to the top, but just the view of the woods from a little different perspective is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it is. I always joke, I don't know why we even put stairs on the tower itself, just because the ramp is such more an experience.
It is indeed. Well, our guests today, Jim Buchholz and Eric Hyde, we're talking with them about the state parks, zeroed in a bit on Peninsula State Park and Rock Island State Park. And also another one of my favorites, Newport State Park, and we'll get to Newport as well. Join in with your questions. The number is 800-642-1234. You can email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at our state parks today and zeroing in on a few with our two guests to begin the show, Jim Buchholz, who is the author of Wisconsin State Parks, Forest and Recreation Areas, A Nature's Guide, and Eric Hyde, Property Supervisor for Peninsula State Park, Newport State Park, and Rock Island State Park. Jeff in Port Washington has a question. Maybe this one's for Jim. Let's go. Jeff, hi.
Yes. My wife and I are actually in Door County right now, and it's one of the things that we enjoy the most are the state parks. The question I have, though, is that we live in the Port Washington area, and there's a lower volume park there, Harrington Park, which we just love. It has camping facilities. It's Long Lake, Michigan. It's got a quarry that we go around. It's beautiful. The problem is that they don't get the funding compared to the larger volume state parks. And so as a result, the roads have horrible potholes in them. And the trees, the ash trees are falling down. So it's actually looking more like a blight. And I spoke with a ranger. They have one ranger there, and he's doing the best he can to stay up with it. But he says, we just don't have the funding. So we get a lot of volunteers that help out there, but you still need the money to pay for the actual materials to repair the roads and that sort of thing. Where I'm going with this is there any way to access more state funds for state parks so that the lower volume parks can get back in repair like they were years ago? Because it seems like in the last several years, the repair of the smaller volume, lower volume parks has gone down.
Yeah. Jeff, thank you for calling. Jim, a comment?
Well, I visited Harrington Beach actually last weekend, and I'd have to agree with the caller. The roads are in terrible shape there. Some of it has been repaved, and I know the state is working to repave roadways. I know Peninsula had several projects. They have some really nice roadways now there. So I think it's coming. It's taking time. And as far as the trees, unfortunately, Harrington Beach, there's an awful lot of ash trees there. So the emerald ash borer has decimated all the ash trees pretty much over the state. And they've spent some huge amounts of money removing quite a few of them. So, yeah, it does kind of look in areas that it's kind of like it got hit by a bomb in places. But it'll come back again. It's just going to take time. But Molly McKay, I know you have on later today, and she's the manager of Kohler Andry and Harrington Beach as well. So she might be able to address that. I was happy to see, though, that there was a washed out road along there, the park, and that was washed out for, I don't know, several years. And I was surprised how long it took to get that replaced, but it is replaced, and it is drivable. At least for the, you can actually drive most of the roads through the beach areas, but there's a shuttle system there that she can talk about later. But I was glad to see that part is done. And I agree. Funding is definitely a problem. State parks can only spend what the state legislature allows them to spend. So they don't get to keep, just like Peninsula and Kohler Andry and Devil's Lake. They take in a lot of revenue because they're so heavily used, but that all gets pooled together in a statewide system. And the state legislatures are the ones who can decide how much of that is distributed to each state park. So I guess the only thing I can say is if you're not happy with things that are going at certain parks, get a hold of the legislatures and ask them why funding hasn't been increased in those areas.
Yeah, good points. Jeff, thank you very much for calling. We'll try to bring that up later on in the show with Molly as well. Appreciate your call. Back to Peninsula for just a minute. I was thinking as we were talking, I think I've spent at least 3 months at Peninsula State Park at one point or another. I'm thinking about my daughter, Emily, who's 21 years old now. I think we started taking her there when she was two. So just, and we spent a lot of time at Nicolet Bay Beach. Eric, do you want to talk about that? It's probably the most popular, I think it is the most popular beach within the park.
Yeah, so the Nicolet Beach is a beautiful area, going back to the, indigenous people that lived here, that was kind of their main area too. So it's been a place loved by humans for thousands of years. Just beautiful views of Horseshoe Island there, beach. We have a great concessionaire there that we always, encourage folks to support them because all of our partners donate money back to the state or our friends group. But the beach there, volleyball courts, we've got food trucks there now. So just a really nice family-friendly area, pretty large area, nice sandy beach. So it's a great place to check out and visit.
Yeah, it is indeed. I've thrown a softball around and a football around in there many times with my daughter as well. There's some, and built many a sandcastle.
Yep.
On that beach with her. So that was a lot of fun. Well, Newport State Park, you're the National Resources Property Supervisor for Northern Door County unit. Describe that park. It's a really interesting park, and I always make it a point to visit it when I'm in Door County.
Yeah, Newport's definitely a little bit different than Peninsula State Park, for sure. I think last year attendance was like around 150,000, and it's just a very large park. There's 11 miles of shoreline there. It's the only wilderness-designated state park in the Wisconsin State Park System, and it's also the only dark sky-designated state park in Wisconsin and one of the few in the Midwest. So just really special place there, being, you know, kind of away from some of the main busy areas in Door County, and then having the lake there, it's just incredibly dark. So that's something our naturalist, Beth Bartoli, worked to get us that designation. It's something we have to take annual light readings to make sure we keep that designation. So, you know, we work with a lot of our neighbors to try to keep the dark skies there, because it's been such a big attendance area for people to go out there and check out the Milky Way, you know, with the naked eye. It's just, you know,
it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. And Jim, you wrote in your book that there was some local opposition to the creation of Newport State Park. Talk about that.
That's true. The state recognized early on in the 1940s, they tried to purchase that property. It kind of was an abandoned community that was there for quite a few years, and it kind of went into a ghost town, you might say. And kind of vacant land, and the state wanted to purchase the property, but the local citizens were really against it. They thought they would be overrun by tourists and campers, and maybe they were watching Peninsula, I'm not sure. But they did finally approve later on. It took a couple decades. 20 years later, they finally got approval from the local citizens to create a state park there, but it had to be a low-impact wilderness state park, and that's became the first wilderness state park that the state ever came up with, and it still is, and it's still a beautiful place to go, and still very quiet, and all the sites are walk-in sites there. So, but just a beautiful place to just go for the day and hike, even if you're not camping. We enjoy going up there once a year, probably, for sure. We head up that way ourselves.
Yeah, I always like the trails. There's some great ones in there that really, really, really nice. Eric, maybe describe the trails that you've got.
Yeah, so we've got some really neat ones there. Lynn Point is a very popular one. That's from kind of our main parking area down by the beach, but it goes out to a little kind of rocky point where you've got some small little cliffs, and yeah, just a really interesting trail. And then going north farther, northern part of the park, there's some, you know, there's Europe Bay or Europe Lake is over there, and that's actually a lake that used to be bay connected to the lake, but then when the lake levels changed, it got landlocked in there. So beautiful views of that lake. And then there's also, you know, old sand dunes that you're kind of going over, and just, you know, not too many places you can go for a mile long walk on the beach in Wisconsin, but Newport, even just hiking the beach, I always tell visitors to check that out just because it's such a beautiful stroll.
Yeah, it is indeed. And that bay trail, I think that's, what is that, about 7 miles, 6-7 miles?
Yep, about 6-7 miles. Yeah, we have about 30 miles of trails in total at Newport.
It's really fantastic. The other, and we'll probably skip back and forth here a little bit, but I wanted to get Rock Island State Park in as well. This is the northernmost state park that you supervise, and it's a little different way to get there.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, you got to take a couple ferries. You got to take the car ferry from Northport over to Washington Island, drive across Washington Island, and then hop on the Carfee, which is a passenger only ferry that goes from Washington Island to Rock Island. So it's definitely a little bit more of a trip to get there, but the rewards of going there are just amazing. We have 40 walk-in campsites, a handful of backpacking sites, and just, yeah, once you get on island time up there on Rock Island, I mean, once the last ferry leaves at 4 o'clock, you're stuck there. So there's not much of a reason to keep track of time. Just enjoy
the time. And neither motor vehicles or even bicycles, I don't think, are allowed there.
Correct. Yep. Yeah, just all walking trails. So we got to obviously a little bit of equipment there for our staff to maintain it. But otherwise, yeah, it's only way to get around is on foot there.
Yeah, it's pretty good. What kind of wildlife are you going to find at Rock Island State Park?
So Rock Island, depends on the year and how much ice there is. Most years we actually don't have any raccoons, so you're just finding, you know, smaller mammals and squirrels, some foxes, occasional coyotes up there, deer, and then lots of birds, and normally lots of snakes too. Always surprises me how many big fox snakes and water snakes. But don't worry, there's no poison snakes up there. So,
and no bears or skunks either, I don't think, on the island.
Yeah, normally not skunks. I don't think there's been a bear out on Washington Island for a while. We did have one last year that came into Peninsula State Park, and fortunately it left the temptations of all the smells from the campers. But yeah, Rock Island's definitely a cool place to check out. I always call it a kind of a conglomerate of all the Door County state parks. You've got the beautiful bluffs and the lighthouse on the west side, and then, you know, the Cuesta, the east side of the escarpment. You've got really nice sandy beaches, these big historic buildings. Other than, I think, Aslan State Park, it's the only other state park that has a National Historic Landmark designation by the National Park Service on it, with its rich indigenous history there. So,
yeah, it's one of those parks that you need to make that kind of a destination. It's not one you're going to just run out there and then you stay an hour and you're done. It's going to take you a little bit of time to get there, a little bit of time to get back. And so if you're planning a day trip there and not planning to stay overnight, you need to kind of make that, you know, pretty much your day.
Yep. Yeah. And it's good to give yourself a cushion, because especially later in September, sometimes the winds get pretty strong in the Carfee. There's some days the lake is just so rough, it doesn't run out there. So it's always good to prepare with a little extra food in case you got to spend an extra night. But
yeah, I want to go back to Peninsula for just a minute, because I had planned to talk a little bit about the trails, because I've been on every single one, I think, many more, and several times. And Jim, in your book, you highlight the Eagle Trail, which can be hiked to Eagle Cave or the caves. And that's the trail, probably the hardest trail.
Well, they have it designated, I believe, in their brochures as difficult. It's called the Eagle Bluff Trail. It's about 2 miles long. I guess the difficult part maybe is it kind of go down step stones down the different ledges of limestone. But the trail is really pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
I've done it many times. I pretty much do it every year, and I'm 73, so if I can do it. But it's a couple challenging areas down below, but there's lots of springs down there. But, you know, take your time. That's what I tell people. Take your time. Wear good footwear. You know, don't come with sandals or something. Take decent footwear. And it doesn't have to be hiking boots, but, you know, decent shoes. Tennis shoes are fine, but to get down next to the bluff area and be able to look up and see Treasure Cave, which is one of those caves I mentioned earlier that was kind of a different kind of a cave. It was formed when the water levels were much higher, and that washed out. It's a washout cave, but it's interesting to see. You really can't climb up into it. It's pretty high up, but it's just fun to see. And once you get down below the bluff area, you go along the lakeshore, parallel to the lakeshore, and just beautiful views out on the lake right through a a cedar glade, cedar tree glade. And it's a nice hike back up again, but again, take your time and pretty much you can do it.
Yeah, you can indeed. We had an email from a listener to ask who they should call to report record numbers of great blue herons nesting at Big Bay State Park on Madeline Island. Jim, do you have an answer to that?
Yeah, I would, you know, if they're interested, they can contact the wildlife manager in that area. I'm not sure who that is, but they can go online and find out where the closest DNR office is if they want to report that. And yeah, it's interesting. And they change from year to year. We had one nearby here, a great blue heron nesting area. And it's impressive. I mean, they make nests about the size of bald eagles. A lot of people think they're bald eagles because they're so big. But usually they're in clusters, sometimes 20, 30, 40 or more of them tall, high up in the tree. And it's pretty impressive to see. So they might be interested in knowing that. It might be a new one.
Yeah, it could well be. And so it should be reported. Oh, man, lots to talk about. By the way, you can join in, too. Question, comment, you can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Eric, somebody was asking about the lighthouse, the Eagle Bluff Lighthouse. At Peninsula, what are the tours of the lighthouse like?
Yeah, so a few years ago, the Door County Historical Society, we actually have an agreement with them. They're the ones that operate it and give tours. But yeah, basically all summer long, you can come out and do it's self-guided tours. This year will be a little bit different just because they have some projects going on. They've done an excellent job fundraising. Last year, I believe they've spent around $300,000 doing restoration projects to the outside. This year, they're going to be doing some restoration to the inside. They're also building replicas of the barn and the summer kitchen that used to be there. So that'll be kind of part of the tour. So really exciting. But yeah, it's a beautiful view. The lighthouse was built in 1868. Thanks to, you know, our partners and volunteers, they were able to restore that and, you know, give public access to it. So they have it set off in a stage of a family that was there for 30 years. They had seven boys that lived in there. So you kind of get to see how it was decorated then and how seven boys shared one room.
that must have been quite a trip. And just the lighthouses themselves, Jim, there's more than one lighthouse that you can visit in Door County.
Oh, yeah, there are. In all the way from those that are in urban areas all the way to more remote ones. But I've done the lighthouse tour actually twice at Peninsula, and they do an excellent job. And if I recall right, I think they let you go right up to the lens areas. Is that still true, Eric?
Not quite. You can go up the spiral staircase and you can take a peek at the lens, but that's actually the original Fresnel lens there. So that's a pretty expensive, delicate glass. So you don't get to go to the top. But if you head up to Rock Island to the Pottawatomie Lighthouse, which is the oldest lighthouse in Wisconsin, that you can go all the way up to the top because they have a replica of the lens. So that's a really cool experience seeing it from the top.
Wow.
Okay, that might be the one I'm thinking of. I wonder, Eric, if you could say something about the Northern Sky Theater. I think some people don't even know it exists there, but it's I don't know if you've ever gone to that, Larry. It's
I have.
The Northern Sky Theater.
I have, and it's a hoot. Eric,
yeah, it is.
Talk about what people are going to be able to see there.
Yeah, so Northern Sky Theater, they've been around previously American Folklore, but they've been around since 1970, and they just have this beautiful area in the pine trees, beautiful stage, and they do all original plays. So they actually have a world premiere every year. This year they have a show called Something in the Water, which is about the Grand Waukesha Spring Resort and folks kind of going into nature. And yeah, it's super funny shows. They always do. I think they're bringing back Derrieres, which is a play they did a while back. And then also No Bones About It, which is about a kind of a Romeo and Juliet style play about I think about a barbecue event or something like that. So yeah, definitely worth checking out.
They're always the ones I've seen have always a lot of fun with some often some singing and a lot of jokes. Some of them pretty darn corny, depending on the play itself. But it, always a lot of fun. And sometimes I've gone up there with my daughter and. It got her up on the stage when there wasn't something going on, and had her do a little play for me. And
yeah,
you can go there and just have a really good time, even if there's not an event going on. Oh my goodness! Another area I was thinking about my daughter now, and I have had a really interesting time visiting the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
That's there.
Yeah, I never thought coming into state parks that I'd, you know, be a steward of a bunch of different cemeteries. But yeah, we have there's actually one in the park. It's the only in-holding. It's the Pioneer Cemetery. So that was some of the very original families that, you know, had cabins and, you know, came to the area that's now Peninsula State Park. So some of those date back to the late 1800s, early 1900s. And then the town actually has their active cemeteries there still in the park, and also out on Horseshoe Island. And then Rock Island has a few cemeteries too. So
yeah, there's it's interesting. And just to walk around that with my daughter and look, read what was on the headstones and speculate a bit on the lives of those people. We had kind of an interesting couple of hours there one day.
Yeah.
Carol, who's between Rhinelander and Minocqua, has something for us. Hi, Carol. Carol, are you there? Oh, we must have lost her.
Oh, sure. Yep. I'm here.
Oh, you're there? Okay. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Carol.
I don't know. My phone screen in the car is not cooperating today. Okay. I just wanted to say last summer I went to... Rock Island on one of the Natural Resource Foundation field trips. It was amazing. I'd always wanted to go there. And, I mean, the whole Ferguson story and Pottawatomie Lighthouse. I got a picture of me standing up by that beautiful Fresnel lens and just walking around the island. It was great.
Oh, thanks, Carol. Well, that brings to mind that another way to get there, I guess, Jim.
Another way to get there?
She was part of a tour, so that was probably a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always think of Rock Island, and people ask me, but I said, that really should be a state park bucket list. If there's one that you really should go and see, even though you have to take two ferries to get there, one is a car ferry, the other one is just a passenger ferry. Actually, you can go there by boat if you have your own boat as well. They still have a area underneath the Viking Hall is the Viking Hall Boathouse, actually. And you can go there, and it's there's a small fee. It's by the size of the boat. So it's another way. You can go there all by yourself if you want to.
And Eric Hyde gets to watch over all this. Eric, it's been a real pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll do this again. Maybe I'll run into you at one of those parks this summer.
Yep, I'm here all the time. And yeah, if I can give a quick shout out to the three friends groups for up here at the Newport Wilderness Society, the Friends of Peninsula.
Yeah, go ahead.
And Rock Island. They do so much here. The Rock Island, they run a docent program for the lighthouse, so folks stay there for a week at a time. They have camp host cabins, just super helpful. The Friends of Peninsula, they raised, I think, over $750,000 for the tower, and they're at about over $1 million to get some new mountain bike trails in the park. And then the Newport Wilderness Society, they just have weekly Volunteers Day, and they just do a tremendous job. So we're really thankful for our friends groups, and if you're looking to get involved, I definitely recommend checking out one near your closest state park.
Yeah, that's a great reminder, and just another reminder, we're going to be talking later on in the show with Cliff Wall, who is a board member of both the Friends of Wisconsin State Parks and Friends of Heritage Hills State Parks. And so we'll get a chance to talk with him and put more of a spotlight on those friends groups. And Eric, I'm glad you mentioned it. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to another visit, or maybe I'll see you in person this summer. Thanks,
yeah,
Eric.
Yeah, pleasure. Hope to see you. Bye.
Eric Hyde, Property Supervisor for Peninsula State Park, Newport State Park, and Rock Island State Park. Coming up, Molly McKay joins us, Property Supervisor for Kohler-Andrade State Park and Harrington Beach State Park. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at our Wisconsin State Parks, Forests, and Recreation areas. Jim Buchholz is going to stay with us throughout the program today. I'm really happy for that. And happy to introduce you to Molly McKay, Property Supervisor for Kohler-Andrade State Park and Harrington Beach State Park. So we will talk with her, and certainly we'll take your questions and comments, and I hope you join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Molly McKay, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you took this job over, I think, last June. You have served as property manager for Kohler-Andrade State Park. It's located on Lake Michigan, of course, in Sheboygan County. Now, you've had 10 months or so there. Have you visited the whole park yet?
I have. I've actually been working in the park since 2020. I just moved into a new role last year, and so I'm really familiar with the property.
So you were for DNR park ranger, were you not?
Yes. Yep, that's it.
So you were there, and then they just moved you over into this position. How does it feel to be in it?
It's great. I love it. It's really the dream job.
Yeah, I bet it is. Well, I think it's probably, and I love the park too. It's probably best known for its beachfront and sand dunes. I wonder how much do the wind and the waves alter the landscape there?
Oh, it's amazing how much the lake affects the landscape. And excuse me, I can go out one day and then come back a few days later and things change so quickly. The lake is a really powerful thing.
So it moves the landscape around a little bit.
Yeah, it moves the sand. And so we had really high waves, high lake levels in 2019 and 2020. They were extremely high. And since then, all of the dunes that had been washed away are starting to rebuild. And so you get to actually go out and see how much growth has happened, you know, after just a few months, and particularly in the winter, because in the winter months, the wind is coming more from the south. And so it moves a lot of that sand across the dunes and does a lot of building.
Yeah, it's really cool. Jim, who was, talk about who the park was named after.
Well, it was named after actually two people, named after Terry Andree. He was an industrialist, business owner from Milwaukee, and he had a home along the beach there. That's how it all got started. When he passed away in 1927, his wife Elsbeth Andree donated that his property to the state to become a state park. At that time, it was 120 acres, and of course the park has since grown to I think 2,000 acres now. But that was the start of it. And later on in the 1960s, the Kohler Company donated land as well on the northern part of what is now Kohler-Andrade State Park. And that was dedicated to John Michael Kohler, who was the founder of the Kohler Company, which I think pretty much everybody knows what they produce. And that's how it got its name. So for short, you know, it's a long name, John Michael Kohler, Terry Andree State Park. They're all, so it's just kind of been changed over the years to just be called Kohler-Andrade State Park.
Yeah, interesting background there. Molly, the trails, there's some cool trails. Describe the trails located within the park.
Sure. So we have some pretty diverse trails. The one that we're most well known for is the Dunes Cordwalk. And that's a trail that goes right through the center of the Kohler Dunes State Natural Area. And it's a plank trail to help protect the dunes because walking on the sand itself is pretty tricky. It's about 2 miles one way. It's and it has little offshoots that bring you down to the lake so you can make a loop that's as long as you really want it to be. People come from all over the place to see it and to take photos of it. We also have some trails that are through the woods. We have the Woodland Dunes Trail, and then we have a little piece of property that's not accessed from the main park entrance called the Black River Trails. And we also have the Ancient Shores Trail, which goes through a prairie, and that goes along the edge of the an ancient lake where the lake used to be.
Pretty cool. And I think my favorite, though, is the boardwalk. It's a real experience to walk that that boardwalk for sure. And you know, we're not in winter, but we're not likely to have any snow anymore, but you do offer some snowshoes and cross-country skier opportunities, do you not?
We do. When we have snow, which the last few years has been lacking, but when we do have snow, we've got about a 2 mile cross-country ski trail that we groom. And then we have about a mile and a half long snowshoe trail as well.
And how does the there's an interurban bike trail that kind of explain that, how that trail serves the state park?
So the route of the interurban bike trail goes through the state park. It's not a separate trail. It's a bike lane on our roads, but you can access the interurban trail by heading through the park. So we get quite a bit of bike traffic heading that way.
And let's talk campsites for a minute as well. How in demand are the campsites there?
Oh, my gosh. We get calls all the time of people saying, I think there's something wrong with your reservation service because it looks like every single weekend is booked all summer. And I have to say, I'm really sorry to tell you that that's actually true. They are all full. Every weekend, all summer is 100%. And even most of the weekdays, you know, if we have a few campsites available on a weekday, it's kind of a rare thing.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. Was it always that way?
It's always been very popular. It's one of the most popular parks in the state. But since COVID and the uptick in camping, it has really, really taken off.
Yeah, that's just great. There was a land swap proposal in 2023, I think, with the Kohler Company. What's the status of that? Is there anything going on there?
I don't believe so, but I don't really have much information on that. It's kind of one of those things that it's at a higher level than I'm at.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. We have some questions about Harrington Beach State Park as well. And there's some other things we need to talk about relating to Harrington Beach, and we will we'll certainly get to that. We're talking today with Molly McKay, the property supervisor for Kohler-Andrée State Park and also Harrington Beach State Park. And if you have some questions about those parks or about other state parks as well, Jim Buchholz is with us. He can kind of cover a lot. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Molly McKay and Jim Buchholz. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, focusing on our state parks and recreation areas today. And we have a couple of guests for you right now. Jim Buchholz staying with us. He's served 40 years as a park ranger and park supervisor at several Wisconsin state parks and forests within the DNR. And he is the author of the book, Wisconsin State Parks, Forests, and Recreation Areas, A Ranger's Guide. With us as well, Molly McKay, property supervisor for Kohler-Andre State Park and Harrington Beach State Park. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. And let's take a call. CJ from Sheboygan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, question here for Molly. I apologize. I'm driving. It's a little right now. But my siblings and I went to the Kohler-Andre State Park last year. We saw a sign that said, you know, active dunes, you know, stay on the trail. And, you know, jokingly, we thought, you know, oh, maybe it's like, you know, the sci-fi Dune book. There's worms around there. But on a more serious topic, what constitutes as an active to non-active dune? Surely with the changes in the lakefront there, and you know, can an active or non-active one change?
Yeah, well, dunes change over time, and so the oldest dunes are probably those ones that you would consider non-active. Those dunes are most often forested or have a lot of vegetation on them. It might be forested, or it might be some of the shrubs, like the juniper shrubs that you find in the dunes. But the older the dunes are, they're usually further away from the lakeshore, and they have a lot more vegetation on them, and they're not as prone to changing. They still will change if you are walking around in an area that's not forested, it's not quite as old, and you have a lot of footprints on it, and you maybe start a trail. It's going to disturb the little tiny layer of soil on the top and expose the sand, and then it starts to blow out really quickly, which is why we're always trying to preserve those areas and try to keep people out of the dunes.
Yeah, so a non-active dune is just one that has matured?
Yeah, yeah, it's not really changing at the same rate that those newer dunes are changing at.
CJ, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Hans in Door County. We'll go to you now. Hi, Hans.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for the great show. Larry, I had a quick question about Pottawatomie State Park. You enjoy it very much. It's close to Sturgeon Bay, where I live. Are you familiar with the restored tower that's going to be open to the public again this spring? Have you heard anything about it?
Well, I tell you what, Jim Buchholz probably has an answer to that. Jim?
Yeah, that tower, also a beautiful view of the, it's over a Sawyer Harbor, right in Pottawatomie. It's on top of a bluff area, 150-foot bluff, actually. But that tower has been closed. Oh, boy, I bet you it was, maybe the caller knows, but I know it's been probably 10 years or so. It was found not safe by today's standards. And did I hear the caller right that it has been restored now and is open? Because it wasn't the last time I went there. It was still closed yet.
I think Hans was saying that he was wondering if it was open. So he wasn't sure either. Is that right, Hans?
As far as I know, it has not been reopened. But that was one of the highlights of Pottawatomie. So I sure hope that they will be, I'm sure they're actively working on getting that restored so they can open it up again. The problem was it was built actually through local citizens built that way back in 1931. So due to the age, it's a wooden structure, and it's there are efforts underway to replace it, and hopefully that will be done eventually. It's just going to take time and a lot of funding to do it. So hopefully it'll be done within a few years.
Hans, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Molly, I want to go back to the friends groups for just a minute, because you do have an active Friends of Kohler Andre State Park. And this winter, the group had a series of cabin fever events. What were those like, and what activities did they hold?
So cabin fever is kind of a special thing that we started doing last year, because in the past, the Nature Center was closed from October and the end of October until May. And we just thought we might as well utilize the space. So one Saturday a month, we have what we're calling cabin fever. And we have a series of programs. Usually there's kind of a theme for each program. And there's usually two things that go on each day. So one week it was about mammals, and we looked at mammal furs and tracks and scat. And then we had someone come and give a program about tracking animals in the winter. We actually had Jim come and talk about his book for one of our programs. We've had a lot of variety, I guess. Lately, we've been talking more about the upcoming spring. So we're talking about planting, and we're talking about birding and building bluebird boxes.
And the Nature Center itself is staffed in part by volunteer hosts.
Yeah, it's actually entirely staffed by volunteer hosts. The staff at the park, it just takes care of maintenance and upkeep for the building. But we have volunteers that hold all of our shifts. And so we actually have Nature Center hosts all summer long, and we're open every single day from May through October. And so we have people lined up to work there all summer long. And we're actually looking for Nature Center hosts. So if you know anybody who's got an interest in natural resources and talking to people and wants to come and stay at the park, particularly in July, Nature Center hosts actually get a place to camp. They get a campsite for the time that they're staying there. And they're committed to 5 days a week of working a few hours a day in the Nature Center. And it's a pretty fun activity, I think, because you get to talk to people from all over the world that are coming to visit the park.
Yeah, that's a great perk.
It is, yeah.
I like it. And I just got a note that the Green Bay Press Gazette reported that the tower at Pottawatomie State Park will reopen this spring after being closed for over 7 years due to significant decay. So it's going to be reopened this spring. So coming soon to the park. It's great to hear that. The value of those contributions of those volunteers, though, must be significant from your point of view.
Oh, it's so significant. I looked at recently looked at how many hours our volunteers put in last year, and they essentially triple our staff time just by volunteer time, because we have so many volunteers working for us. It's amazing. We couldn't do it without them.
I wanted to turn our attention as well to Harrington Beach State Park. That's just south of Kohler Andre. It's another state park on Lake Michigan that you oversee. Can you describe the park?
Sure. So Harrington Beach State Park is got a little over a mile of Lake Michigan shoreline. And so in some ways it's similar to Kohler Andre because we've got some really beautiful beach, but it is different. We don't have the big dune complexes, and we have more cedar and ash swamp. But it's got 70 campsites. We have miles of trail. We've got something that's really unique is we actually have an observatory, and the Northern Cross Science Foundation takes care of that. And they have special astronomy events going on all throughout the summer.
That's pretty good, pretty cool. And Jim, the history of that park is pretty cool too. And there's no motor vehicle traffic, directly through the park, is there?
No, it's a pretty unique situation. It was named actually after C.L. Harrington, who was the first superintendent of state parks and forests. He was superintendent from 1923 until 1950. But a big part of the park, of course, is the lake and the mile of beautiful beachfront, which is huge. I was there last weekend, and it's amazing how large it is now. The beach areas is really wide and beautiful, and there were a lot of people there just last weekend. But some people don't know, just inland, a short area is a quarry area, and that was a 26-acre quarry that was used for removing limestone back in the day, and beginning way back in the 1800s into the 1900s. And when it was abandoned, it filled up with water. So now it's a beautiful inland lake. It's crystal clear water, 45 feet deep. And there's a beautiful trail that goes around it. It's called Quarry Lake Trail. So if you're enjoying the beach and you want a little break, go inland. It's an interesting trail. It's got interpretive signs along the way. And one of the things I find interesting along that trail is the exposed limestone. And if you look carefully, there's fossils embedded in that limestone. And there's also scrape marks that were left by the glacial ice that moved through that area over 12,000 years ago. And you can see the exact direction that the glacier moved, which is normally northeast in our area. So interesting trail, and it's a fun trail. Really a lot of birds and a lot of forests and beautiful views of the Quarry Lake.
A caller who couldn't stay with us, but said, let's see, what did that caller say here? I'm just trying to get to the point where I can read it. There was a shuttle service at Harrington Beach from the campsites to the beach, and that stopped operating during COVID. Is that back up and being used or not?
It's not currently. It's something that they actually sold the shuttle several years ago, and there's a lot of talks about, you know, how we can get some sort of access to the beach going again, because one of our bigger parking lots is a little bit of a walk. And so that shuttle service really helped reduce the pressure on the parking down by the lake. So the main issue is always trying to find a way to pay for a new shuttle service to get set up and then operating it.
Yeah. Scott and Mekwan had called, couldn't stay with us, said it was the legislature that cut the state tax funding for the parks. The only revenue the individual parks receive is what they can kind of bring in on their own. Is that true in your case, Molly?
Yeah, all of our state parks are self-funded. We are just funded by the revenues that we bring into the system. So yeah, we're reliant on our visitation, and that's what pays for all of our operating costs.
A listener emailed to ask if each state park has a naturalist and is there a directory so they can chat with one at a park that interests them.
So not all state parks have naturalists. It's limited. There's actually only a couple of full-time permanent naturalists that are left in the state park system. And then we've got limited term employee, LTE naturalists that work at a variety of different parks. So it's kind of spotty. I know at Kohler, we have a naturalist, but a lot of parks don't have one.
Okay. And Jim, I want to go back to the sort of the background or history. In your book, you said that Harrington Beach State Park was a lesser known day use property for over 40 years. Until it became really popular.
Right. It kind of got discovered, you might say. It was just a day-use park, and even though it was so close to the Milwaukee area, it's in Ozaukee County, so just north of Milwaukee a little ways. I think what really changed that was when we decided to put a campground there. And that was, I can't remember the exact date that happened, but in the 90s, I believe it was, or early 2000s. And that made a big difference. All of a sudden, we had a campground, a large campground, and it got to be known well after that. And, you know, people discovered things like the Quarry Trail and the big beach that's there. And, wow, it surely has changed from a little-known park to one of the more popular state parks, and so accessible because it's so close to the big metropolitan areas of the state.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the River Edge Nature Center is nearby. What do visitors find there?
River Edge, yeah, that's a beautiful place. It's along the Milwaukee River, and I believe it's about 200 some acres, and they have a nature center there and some beautiful trails. They do a lot with school groups and youngsters, and on site, they actually have an area where the state is raising lake sturgeon to be reintroduced into Lake Michigan. And there are times when they're open that you can go and watch and see how they do that. Tanks full of baby lake sturgeon, which is kind of neat to see. Then they have release days where they release them either into the Milwaukee River. You can watch that. Or some, I know, they bring right to the Milwaukee shoreline and release them like at Lakeshore State Park in downtown Milwaukee. They have a release there as well. So, but lots of hiking trails and lots of neat things to do at River Edge, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I just go back to Kohler Andre for a minute, because the Sanderling Nature Center, you had a little note in there about the naming of why it's named that.
Yeah, the Sanderling Nature Center. You know, it's amazing that people go to Kohler Andre for years, and even the local people go to the beach and enjoy the park. And then you tell them, you know, there's a nature center here, and they say, what? But it was developed in 1972. It's a beautiful facility. It's got a 99-seat auditorium where they have programs and show movies and all kinds of neat things, as Molly mentioned. But I really don't know who named it. I can't tell you that. But it's named after the Sanderling, which is a little sandpiper. If you go to the beach, oftentimes you'll see these little sandpipers running along the shoreline, picking around, eating little things in the surf. And those are Sanderlings. They migrate through the area to go up north to go. They do their nesting farther north, but there are Sanderlings that do not nest. There's some of them, the younger ones, and they'll be there all summer long. So if you see these little birds running along the shoreline, those are Sanderlings, and that's what they named the nature center after.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Molly, what wildlife are we going to find at the parks?
Well, you will definitely see a lot of deer. We have very healthy deer populations in the parks. We also oftentimes hear and sometimes see coyotes and red fox. We've also got lots of very well-fed raccoons hanging around in the parks. And we have a lot of birds. And you'll see a lot of waterfowl, especially during migration. This time of year is a great time to see the red-breasted merganser. They like to hang around in the wintertime on the Michigan shoreline. I know at Harrington, we have a grassland that has some of those grassland bird species. So we've got bobolinks, upland sandpipers, meadowlarks, some of those, you know, open grassland species that you don't always get to see everywhere else.
You know, and we hear on the show sometimes when we're doing a birding show, somebody will call and say, I never hear a bobolink, or I never hear a couple of the birds you just mentioned, which I've got to remember to bring this up, that if they want to hear those meadowlarks again, one good place to go would be there, I guess.
Yeah, and the bobolink trail actually is a great place. It's a prairie trail at Harrington, and it's something that's being managed by wildlife. So it you know, we are really working on maintaining the quality for habitat.
That's wonderful. Well, Beth emailed to say they love Wisconsin State Parks. Since retiring in 2019, Beth said they have joined a group of friends on a quest to camp in each state park, and they're having a great time pursuing that goal. Beth wanted to specifically rave about the bike trail from Point Beach State Park to Two Rivers and on to Manitowoc. What a beautiful and fun ride with woodlands and some rolling hills and glades and interesting cultivated and decorated mulch beds in the more urban areas. Always lots to see. I mean, what's the, for you, Molly, what's the joy of working in a park, at the two parks that you work at?
For me, I would say my biggest joy is just being able to see the lake every day. I love Lake Michigan, and it's just such an amazing thing to be working in such close proximity to it and seeing all of its moods and the way it changes things and affects everything.
Yeah, the moods reminded me of a piece that, Jim, that you had. Sometimes the mood isn't good, and sometimes problems occur, and there was the steamship Niagara years ago that was lost. I think 60 people lost their lives.
Yeah, that was right off Sheboygan, and actually there's a good interpretive display actually at Harrington Beach about that, and the actual anchor from that steamship was there. But unfortunately, it caught fire, and quite a few lives were lost. It's one of the more tragic. These were immigrants from Holland, primarily heading south to the Ozaukee area, which is immigrants from the mostly Holland area. But tragic tale, and there's been books written about it even, but lots of loss of life on that one. But that's, you know, when you look at the shipwrecks along Lake Michigan, there's literally hundreds and up to thousands of shipwrecks. There's actually a part of a wooden ship at Coleraine State Park. Part of it's outside. You can look at it. Inside, there's a whole display about that particular ship. So if you're interested in marine history, there's some history right at Coleraine that you can, both Harrington and Coleraine are good for that.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today, Molly. I appreciate your time very much. You had some nice words to say about the volunteers, and coming up, we're going to be talking, you know, about the statewide effort when it comes to volunteers. I appreciate your time and hope we can do this again. Thanks, Molly.
Yeah, thanks. It's been my pleasure.
Molly McKay is the property supervisor for Coleraine State Park and Harrington Beach State Park. Next up, we'll talk about those volunteer friends groups with Cliff Wall. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We've been talking to DNR property managers throughout this our series on Wisconsin State Parks, and now we're going to turn our attention more fully to the network of park supporters and friends groups. And our guest now is Cliff Wall. Cliff's a board member for the Friends of Wisconsin State Parks, vice president of the board for the Heritage Hills State Historical Park, and we'll certainly talk about that. And sticking with us, Jim Buchholz, retired state park supervisor and the author of Wisconsin State Parks, Forest and Recreation Areas, A Ranger's Guide. Are you a member of a friends group for maybe a park near where you live? If so, why? And what's the experience been like for you? And what volunteer work do you do for the park? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Cliff Wall, welcome.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here, Larry. You have to add two more things. I'm also a volunteer at Heritage Hill State Park. And the Fox River Trail actually goes through my backyard, and I'm on. I help out at the Fox River Trail. So you're getting four for one here, I guess.
Well, you spend a lot of your free time helping preserve public recreational spaces, obviously. First, I mean, I think you retired a car dealer, if I'm not mistaken.
A family-owned car dealership started in 1929 and sold in March of 2020, which that was the height of COVID. So I had to find something to do. So and my wife said, you found too much to do, actually.
So what does a typical friends group do?
A typical friends group helps raise money for the parks because, as you know, in 2015, the funding changed for state parks, and you've mentioned that on the show. They're really self-funded. So the only way you can get money is fundraising. There are different grants you can apply for. There's a Noel Nelson Fund, and I'm on the FWSP, Friends of Wisconsin State Parks, .org is the website. And we also give grants. And, of course, this year, I guess I'm not answering your question here. Let me answer
your
question.
No, it's all
right. Yeah. What else we do? Well, let me give you an example. I guess at Heritage Hill State Park, we have an informal group that meets Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 to roughly 11, 11:30. We're doing the grounds. So we're cutting out buckthorn, invasives, chipping the debris, helping out wherever if there's one of those so-called fires, we help put that out. And there's another group of volunteers that actually works in the restoration shop, and they will redo the buildings, there's a project in our shop right now, they're redoing an old wagon, getting it painted, getting it ready for the season, because we're going to obviously, in case you haven't heard, the draft is in Green Bay this year, so we're opening the park early in anticipation of that. So we do all the odd jobs that need to be done around the park that just we don't have the staff to do.
Yeah. And sometimes maybe serve in some interpretive capacities, I would think, or at least discussion with folks about the park.
Well, you do just on the job. But typically at Heritage Hill, we actually have hired interpreters for our buildings. And we also have volunteers that will help out at those buildings. Naturally, they see us around, and we have red shirts, say volunteer in the back, so you actually answer questions, and you learn a lot about history, and you learn a lot about invasives and trees and plants. And
yeah. How many friends groups are there in Wisconsin? Do you know offhand?
Yes, I do, because I knew you were going to ask me that. 67 friends groups, and I just before I walked in, Larry, thank you for your donation to FWSP.org because we are trying to raise $125,000 for this year because it's 125 years of state parks. And so fortunately, I did bring a calendar from FWSP I can give to you right now in studio.
All right, he's handing it over right now. There we go.
On the back are all the friends groups. And, of course, what we do at FWSP, we supply grants for friends groups. So we're like an umbrella group, I guess you'd say, so that friends groups can come to us for information. It's education, enhancement. This year we've taken on fundraising. Someone talked about, the Naturalist program. So you can apply for a grant with us for the Naturalist program, and it's a matching grant. So we'll fund naturalists for the parks. And again, it's matching 50-50. So we try to provide, if you want picnic tables, track wheelchairs, fire rings, some of those items that we'll supply a grant, and the friends group will the friends individual friends groups will supply the match. So,
Jim Buckles, in your mind, how important are these friends groups?
Well, it's hard to calculate. As Molly said, we really couldn't run the state parks without them. As we mentioned before, some of those volunteers, and not all, but most, I would say, of our volunteers are Friends members, either with their local organization or the state one, or both. And, you know, we talked about them helping in the park and the nature centers, but there's also groups that do maintenance as well, as Cliff mentioned. For example, at Kohler-Andrea, there's a group that meets once a week, and that's all they do is work on maintenance projects, redo picnic tables, go out in the park and work on things that need to be done there. There's also volunteers that help out in the office as well. There's clerical-type people that help out in the offices when we're a little overrun, you know, with visitors. They help out in there as well. So, and quite a few in the areas. Most of the parks can't afford to have a full-time naturalist, so they depend heavily on Friends members to come out and help and give guided nature hikes and keep the nature center open. And a lot of them even give programs. And quite a few of them now have joined and get training as master naturalists. That's a program, a statewide program that was started quite a few years ago, but it's been really a great program. I'm one of the instructors of that, but it's a statewide program, and they get certified as a master naturalist, and then they can give programs and do lots of other things in the park as well as volunteers.
Some people may be wondering, how do you get involved in that certification program and get certified?
Oh, sure. Yeah, if you go online and look up the Master Naturalist Program, Wisconsin Master Naturalist Program, and you'll get on a site, and they've got opportunities listed all around the state of different areas and places that are offering training for that. It's a 40-hour program. Some are just on weekends. Some are evenings. They're all different. They're actually having one at Kohler-Andrea State Park again this year. We don't do one every year, but there's one there in this area. And most every area in Wisconsin is going to have a program for you to go to. And then you can decide what kind of things you want to do. Some people might want to do, you know, just things like maintaining a lake, oxygen levels, field type positions. Others like to do maintenance. Others like to work on state trails. And quite a few decide they would like to do interpretive work in parks. And it's fun. It's a great, great program. And it's just growing in leaps and bounds. So I think if you go on that website, you'll find something that would interest you for sure.
Yeah, and it's wimasternaturalist.org. I think we've got that up on our page if somebody mm-hmm. wants to look into that program, because it sounds like a really useful program. Cliff, you were going to comment?
I'm always ready to comment, Larry. I should say, you were talking about Heritage Hill State Park. Now, it's Heritage Hill State Historical Park.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, your park sticker does not let you get into that park. You have to pay an admission because we have paid interpreters at the buildings. So keep that in mind. We'd love to have you visit, but keep in mind we'd give you a discount if you have a state park sticker. But keep that in mind. So we have different events going on, of course, to raise money. We've got I'm supposed to mention this, we're having a Bourbons something coming up March 28th. Tickets are still available. I told people I'm going to ask for the money and ask for volunteers. please. We can always use bodies and dollars.
Cliff Wall, our guest board member for the Friends of Wisconsin State Parks, vice president of the board for the Heritage Hills State Historical Park, and a whole lot more. One of our guests, Jim Buchholz, retired state park supervisor and the author of Wisconsin State Parks, A Ranger's Guide. Great to have both of them with us. And if you have a question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today, we've been talking about state parks through the whole show, but we're zeroing in a bit now on the Friends of the Friends groups that serve state parks as volunteer liaisons, I guess you could say. And one of them, Cliff Wall, a board member for Friends of Wisconsin State Parks, Jim Buchholz, been with us for many a show now. It's been really fun having him with us, retired state park supervisor, in his book, A Ranger's Guide, Wisconsin State Parks, Forest and Recreation Areas. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. And you got the name of that event, that fundraiser event, and tell us a bit about it.
Okay, the event coming up at Heritage Hill State Park is Barrels and Boards, a bourbon tasting event, March 28th, 7 to 9. Here's the description: a bespoke tasting of unique bourbons, including pairings from a charcuterie table. Ready to sign up? I think it's $100 and $90 if you're a member of the park. The other thing we have, we're talking about, we also have interpreters from various groups. We have the Red Coats of Green Bay, the Corps of Light Group, which is a French Indian group, and La Baie Fur Trade Coalition. So they will come on the weekends and set up, and it'll show you the history of fur trading, of course, in the northeastern Wisconsin. That's how everybody got here, right, to get the fur trading. So they'll have an event, I believe it's going to be in November this year. They'll be quite interesting. They'll be making snowshoes, just different things of history.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
Dominique emailed to say that they volunteer with the North Country Trail in Douglas County, and said most of their fellow volunteers are older folks. And Dominique asked how new and younger volunteers can be recruited.
That's a very good question. Hopefully I'm a great salesperson right now. So please, we take all ages. All you need is a good pair of boots, a good pair of gloves, probably bring some hearing protection, maybe a loppers. And I guess the most important thing is, bring some water with you, because you want to keep hydrated. Other than that, we'll find something for you to do.
Let's talk a little bit about Heritage Hills State Historical Park. What are we going to find in that park? I think a lot of people have. It's a different, way different kind of park than most of the state parks we have.
That is correct. Yeah. So we have there's 50 acres. We have 27 historic buildings. It opened in May of 1977, Larry, and there was a move to move all the historical buildings kind of around northeastern Wisconsin to the one location. So we've got a replica of the original courthouse on its original site in Wisconsin, which is really historical.
Pretty cool.
And that was historical because that was Chief Oshkosh was tried in a court of law, and he was found not guilty of killing another member of another tribe. And I won't get too much into that, because then you got to come and visit us and find out the rest of the story. And then we move up from the fur trading areas, the 1700s, up to the 1800s, late 1800s, early 1900s. We've got the blacksmith shop, a print shop, a fire station and the Moravian Church, so you can have weddings there. Then we go into the Fort Howard area, because we were on the site of Fort Smith. It was a short-lived fort that they moved, that someone moved there because they were too low. They felt it was too low at the mouth of the Fox River. And then we've got the actual Fort Howard, which was the original fort. Now, it's not in its original location, but it gives you an idea. And we've got interpreters there. And then our latest addition, we've got a Belgian farmhouse there. And our latest addition that just opened up in May, it's a migrant worker house from actually the Bond Pickle Factory in Oconto. And that's an interesting story because of the migrant workers in the upper Midwest.
And it's very cool. And these buildings, they're old buildings, but they look kind of brand new. I mean, they've really been kept up or restored, let's put it that way.
We try to restore it as best we can. Some are historic, so you have to really follow strict guidelines to keep them historic. And, of course, as you know, buildings require painting and maintenance. So that's, if you're a volunteer, you can help out there. And, of course, you can do that at any state park. I'm going to keep coming back to we need volunteers, and we certainly need dollars. And if anything, that's the message I want to get across to your listeners, Larry.
Yeah. It's come through in each one of the shows that we've done on state parks. And Jim, maybe you could talk a bit more about the partnership that came between the state and Brown County Historical Society that resulted in the creation of Heritage Hill State Park.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I'm sure Cliff knows it well. But actually, the land that facility is on was purchased by the state of Wisconsin, the state park system. So it's leased by the group now. But the site was once owned by the Green Bay Reformatory, which is the kids' museum nearby. But they built a six-lane highway right through the middle of it in the 1970s. So that's Highway 172. So it isolated that piece of land. So that's where that came from. And the Brown County Historical Society at that time was looking for an area that they could bring these different buildings to. A lot of them were doomed, really. They wanted to get rid of them or tear them down. And luckily, they saved so many of these buildings and moved them to that site, which is a beautiful site. I've been there numerous times. And it's on a hill area, kind of right above the Fox River, actually. And Cliff, I know he mentioned about the Fox River State Recreational Trail, another great trail for biking or hiking. I've biked that many times. It's a paved trail, goes right along the Fox River, and it goes all the way down. Well, it's 25 miles in length, but it goes all the way to downtown Green Bay. And it's just a beautiful place to bike or hike. So if you're in that area, certainly bring a bike along and try out, or just walk along the Fox River State Recreational Trail.
And I know you wanted to add a little there, Cliff.
Okay, of course, Larry. It does go through my backyard, splits my backyard. I'm on the Fox River, about five houses down from Heritage Hill. So it goes through a Heritage Hill property, and it goes north and south from, like as you say, from Poyler Street in Green Bay, and it goes actually all the way down to, I think now it actually goes, it goes through Greenleaf, and then it goes further. It actually goes into the next county, into Calumet County, so it's expanding. And, of course, this is a rail bank trail, so this trail is on an old rail bed. And if they need it back, I could have high-speed rail going through my backyard someday.
Well, that probably isn't going to happen anytime soon. But in the meantime, it's a paved trail.
It's paved. In fact, you were asking about fundraising. We are right finishing up to be repaved because it opened up in in 2001. My wife and I are involved in 1988, starting the trail with a group of people to get it rail banked and develop it. So now it's time to have it repaved. So we're in a fundraising effort right now. So I sound like I'm asking for money for a lot of different organizations here. So please donate.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay has something. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I just was wondering. I know that there's another heritage type park that is down in the Milwaukee area. My question is the park that is currently under discussion, is that the one that is across the highway from the prison?
That is correct. Yes, I think you're referring to Old Wisconsin. It sounds like
Old World Wisconsin.
Old World Wisconsin. Yes, and that is not actually a state park. I think that's funded by the State Historical Society, and I may be incorrect on that, but I believe that's
it. No, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. But yeah, Stella, you're right. It's the one that's across from the prison in Green Bay. Yeah, this Heritage Hill. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Well, you want to how is the goal for $125,000 going that you're trying to raise in this 125th year anniversary?
Well, let me answer it this way. There's somewhere around 20 million people, 20 million visits to parks in Wisconsin. If each one of those persons gave us a dollar.
Yeah.
So if you gave us a penny, we'd have 200,000. So we are getting close to the goal for that. And I think if we could find 10 corporations that would give $12,500 a piece, we'd have it. Or, you know, keep breaking it down. So if we get 10 corporations or 100 people with $1,250, or if all your listeners gave maybe $5 to $10, and make sure when you donate, go to fwsp.org, look for the donate button. Larry Mueller did that. He looked for the donate button. Thank you, Larry. We appreciate that. So
I did that just a couple of hours ago before the show. I was inspired looking at everything. I know how many hundreds of trips I've made to state parks around the state. And I thought, well, here I haven't given anything to the Friends group. So I went online and did it. And it took me a minute or two. You know, that was about it, a couple minutes.
Yes, it looked... fwsp.org, and don't worry, we have a lot of buttons for donate, and you can do credit card, check, Venmo, so there's a lot of ways, PayPal, so there's a lot of opportunity to donate. And don't forget to donate, and we will spend every dollar you donate will go to a grant to a state park, which I think is important. We have one paid employee, and that's an executive director to coordinate all these things. So we're lean and mean, which I guess is the key word today, isn't it?
It is indeed. And Cliff, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us. And Jim Buchholz, I want to thank you. You've become a regular here on WPR.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I enjoy doing that. And it's fun to talk to the different managers and people like Cliff who do so much to volunteer their time for Friends groups around the state. I can't say enough about that.
Well, thank you, Jim Buchholz. And Cliff Wall, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about Friends. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you for listening. Always a big group of people that put our program together. Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburns, our technical directors. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patton. And, of course, our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.